There's all these little things. It's really easy to make little errors on. And that's, you know, where I'm coming from in this. It's like, what mistakes have I made? How can I prevent them? How can I help you prevent them? And how can we all kind of like lock arms with our own musical community and rise up a level? I know we can do it, and I know the music business needs it. And I wasn't sure if anybody else was interested. And so now I'm really glad and excited. So thank you.
Hey, hey, welcome to When Songs Mean Business. I'm your host, Steph Belcher. Today's episode is an edit from the first class in my new course, Understanding Money and Music. In this episode, you'll hear my story, the data that got me interested in studying the business of music in the first place, and you'll hear me dissecting a bunch of problems that I encounter when I'm working closely with musicians on their businesses and their taxes. In this episode, I begin to explain the four different industries in the music business and why a musician's tax return looks more complicated than a lot of other businesses. You'll hear from a few of my students and stay tuned near the end for a guided meditation on leadership. I also want to let you know about two really exciting things that I'm releasing in the next couple weeks. First of all, I made a daily planner for you. It's called the Mindful Musician's Daily Planner, and let me quickly tell you what's inside. It has a monthly calendar spread, a monthly finance tracker, a weekly planner, and a separate weekly recap sheet, plus a daily planner and a daily mindset worksheet that you can use to set your goals and intentions for each day. There's also a songwriting planner sheet that you can use when you're writing music with other people or working with a producer. The planner is something that I've been designing for about 5 years, and I'm so excited to finally put it out into the world. There are two ways to order it. You can download a printable version right off my website right now. It's already up there. Or if you would rather have an actual book version of the planner, like I would, you can join our pre-sale. The books will ship the first week of January. Head over to stephbelcher.com/dailyplanner for more information and to place your order. The second super exciting launch is a new group mentorship program called Level Up Your Business. The program is designed for musicians to make themselves more manageable. If you're a musician and you think you're ready for a manager, this is the perfect program for you. It's 12 weeks long, and in those 12 weeks, we'll be working together very closely to get all those tiny little annoying details sorted out so you can hire a manager and they can hit the ground running. Here's a quick list of some of the things that we're going to go over in the program. Registering and setting up an LLC, checking to make sure that everything's registered properly, setting up a new business checking account or reassessing your banking and payment processing needs to make sure that everything is set up properly. Registering copyrights, trademarks, and publishing, making sure that everything is set up properly with the distributor and that all the splits are correct. Making sure that all of your contracts are in line and then you have work for hires ready to go. Making sure that your W-2s are filled out and that you know how to get W-9s from other people that you work with. Fixing any tax or 1099 problems. Setting up any software that needs to be put in the background like Facebook pixels. Making sure that all of your marketing is working properly, that your email list is set up and that the right addresses are in there. And that all of these things are working together so that you can actually run your business. So in order to get into this program, I'm going to have a wait list and an application, and those things will be available right after the new year. So get excited, sign up for my email list, stay tuned, bookmark this podcast. If you listen often, please leave us a review and shoot me an email if you have any questions. Make sure you follow us on Instagram. And without any further ado, let's dive into When Songs Mean Business.
And now, again, welcome. Thank you all so much for joining me. So I usually like to start by just telling a little bit about my story and how I got here, because I think that my story in particular is a little bit different than a lot of other music business people. So I want to kind of like walk you through it really quickly. And then I would love for you to share a little bit about your story too. Feel free to type in the chat or shoot me an email anytime. So I had no idea that I was a numbers person when I was growing up at all. I thought it was purely creative. And I can't really like put my finger on exactly when I started getting interested in it, but I took an accounting class in college that felt like a really easy A. And then I also took an economics class that I just loved. And in that economics class, I started studying the black market of ticketing. and how much money musicians were leaving on the table by pricing their tickets unreasonably low and letting scalpers make up the difference of what the market would actually pay for it. And in the process of that, I kind of uncovered this whole economic world of music that sort of exists, but also sort of doesn't exist because economists don't tend to study music in the way that they study manufacturing or all these other things that they study. They're just kind of like, oh, well, music is so emotional and everybody can make music for free by just, you know, living in their house. And oh, we can't study that. It's too complicated. And that was kind of how it always was when I was growing up, and the things that I was studying was you just kind of were like, oh, you paid for the CD or you paid for the concert ticket, the experience, or you paid for the merchandise, the t-shirt, but the music itself, it was like you could get it for free on the radio or you could get it for free on Napster. And that just kind of sparked this interest inside me that I followed for a long time as I was working in marketing and concert promotion. And I was always really interested in the concert promotion side of what people weren't doing if they were coming to a concert. Because if you spend $300 on a Lollapalooza ticket and you travel in from out of town and you get a hotel room, what aren't you doing? What isn't the band doing? You know, what's the opportunity cost there? And all of these things have come into play for me as I've been a tax preparer. Because when people sit down, actually, I'm kind of jumping ahead in the story. But when people sit down in front of me with their tax return, I can see all these economic decisions that they're making. And I've developed sort of a language for speaking to musicians about how they can make choices in their day-to-day and in their business decisions that are more economically in line with what other industries are doing. And I'm using like general economic principles to explain to them why this is so confusing and why it feels like you can't get ahead. So that's really where I've been coming from as far as like what I'm interested in and where my strengths are within like the music business and finance. And then from a practicing perspective, I did marketing in concert promotion for a very, very long time. And then the 2008-2009 recession kind of like gutted the whole marketing industry in general everywhere. But music took a really hard hit. And I just needed it. I kept getting laid off from, you know, marketing and venue jobs. So I just needed a day job. And I literally applied to like 100 positions on Craigslist. And the first people that called me back were these tax guys. And they were, you know, one of them was an enrolled agent. The other one wasn't. All they did was file tax returns. And I loved it. And I was shocked. Everybody was shocked. They're like, what the hell do you mean? You're doing taxes? That's ridiculous. But I just loved it. And it was a big puzzle for me. And it gave me the opportunity to kind of like flex this interest that I had been developing in economics for a while. I was able to really dive deep into people's businesses and figure out what they were doing that was profitable, what wasn't, how the government was helping, how they weren't. And I was able through time filing taxes for other industries like flight attendants and screen printers, advertising companies. I helped develop an app. College students could sign up for marketing jobs through this app, and I helped do the books for them. Lawyers and dentists. And by doing all that bookkeeping, I was able to see all the ways that musicians are doing it, like not doing it quite as efficiently as they could. And now it is my time to teach all of you finance people how to do this, because I can't help everybody myself. And I need like an army of finance minded people who want to like power out there and help save the music business. Because it's tough. It is a tough, tough time to be a musician. When the venues shut down in 20 and 21, everybody's income took a massive hit. And they're not back yet. And so all these people who were making all this money, gigging out on the road all the time, they're up a creek and they need help. And unfortunately, I can't stand here on Zoom and say, hey, every musician in the whole entire world, here's all the things that you can do better, because it's so different from market to market and from musician to musician. And that was my reasoning behind collecting finance people to help me with this. is because you know what's going on in your city and your music market and your town. And I can help point you toward like national resources and big ideas and kind of like finance minded models, but I need boots on the ground to help execute. So that's what I'm going for. I hope you're in for the mission. I think you are because you're here and I'm excited. So let's get started. I want to show you a little presentation that I made a while ago, and it kind of opens up a whole bunch of conversations about what the current challenges are, where we can go from here, and what some of the actual numbers are, because there's a lot of room for opportunity. And so I want to show you kind of like what it's looking like. All right, so let's start this guy. You know, I already kind of told you about my finance background, but along with music, I started working with musicians in 1998 when I was in high school. It was pure nepotism because my mom was the editor of the local newspaper and she let me review the CDs that came to the office. She didn't put an ad out for that. So I feel lucky that nobody beat me out of that job, because that's what really got me started in it. I learned how to interview people. And then I did marketing for labels and venues, primarily festivals, you know, big scale events, large releases, and ended up in Chicago. That's when I got my tax job. I got married and went to tax school, and I have 3 kids, and they are 11, 7, and 2. So they keep me really, really busy. And I really like teaching because it gives me the opportunity to talk to adults and to work on my own time. Tax season got to be really difficult when I had my second kid. It was really hard for my husband to take care of both kids basically for 3 straight months. So I started teaching, and I really love teaching. It's my favorite thing. This is the first time that I'm teaching finance people instead of musicians. So thank you for being my trial run. Okay. So money, musicians are very stressed about money, pretty much in general. Americans are pretty stressed about money in general. This is from a survey in 2015, but 72% of people surveyed at the time were stressed about money. And I don't think that musicians are writing their best songs and creating their best products if they're waking up in a cold panic about how they're going to pay their rent. So my goal is to help musicians really create whole body wellness, and that includes money. I feel like when all people have a handle on their money, they're more able to tackle everything else. They're able to afford the supplements that they know they need. They're able to get that gym membership and feel like they can take an hour out of time working and actually go for a run. You know, they can donate to charities that they're interested in and start getting on those donor lists. So that I really feel strongly that tackling that money part of it is an important first step. So with that being said, I really like to focus on the wellness of the whole person, which is being in a state of good health, especially as an actively pursued goal. And I really want people to understand when they come to work with me that handling their finances might mean that they have to tackle some bad habits, or, you know, create room for something else, eliminate some of the bad stuff and put in some of the good stuff. That can be pretty tough for some people to wrap their brains around, and it can really hold people back from wellness. So there is a huge element of wellness in everything that I teach and everything that I do. And so when that pops up, you know, just know that I'm coming from a place of like, when you are well, your finances are easier for you to handle. And one thing that I've noticed a lot that really holds musicians back in their own financial goals is that they're constantly comparing themselves to other people. That person has a better keyboard than I do. That person has a better drum set than I do. They have a better camera. They have this, they have that. I don't. And if you can't accept yourself for who you are and release all of the mistakes that you made in the past and the judgments that you've put upon yourself, you know, like, if one thing that really holds musicians back is college. So you have the musicians that started school and took out loans and have huge debt and quit. compared to the students who got full rides and graduated and are doing really well. Whether they're actually doing really well or not is perception in the industry. But the person who maybe didn't graduate and is carrying this debt is beating themselves up about not being able to get ahead because of the things that they're carrying. And they need debt repayment strategies alongside of the understanding that they could still be making career choices and moving forward with their career, even though they have this debt, and that that degree doesn't necessarily mean that they would be successful. You know, that's just an example of the things that pop up in the finance meetings and the tax meetings that I have with people, is that they have a hard time accepting these choices that they've made. And that's a story that I can speak to personally, because when I graduated college, I had $132,000 in student loan debt, and we were in the middle of a recession, and the music business was being absolutely decimated by Napster. So I had no choice but to take a tax job, and I would not be where I am right now today if I hadn't done that, if I hadn't been able to create that pivot. So a lot of times musicians need to hear, it's okay to work at Guitar Center. It's okay to teach piano to seven-year-olds. It's okay to get a coffee job. They think that if they do that, they're not successful, or they're not professional, or they're not real. I think that this happens in a lot of industries, but with music, because so many people can make music, it's a really big pool. You know, there's like somewhere between 50 and 100,000 songs being uploaded between Spotify and YouTube every single day, new songs. We'll talk later about whether or not they're actually new or not when we get to copyright law. But when you have that much music, it can make people feel like they're not special. They're not doing anything unique. So once we kind of clear all these hurdles of being well, accepting where you're at with your actual life, a lot of times those are the two things that we kind of need to get over for the musicians to start asking for what they're actually worth. And that takes us into the first step to effectively managing your finances, is being unafraid of the stories that your information is telling. Another way to say that is that they'll say, like, I don't want to know how much money I spent on food when I was on the road. And they'll tell you that straight up. Like, I don't know. I didn't look. I just eat where I can eat. So we got to get everybody who makes money creatively. This really applies to a lot of different creative industries, to be unafraid of what they're spending on gear, what they're spending on paint, what they're spending on t-shirts. We got to just be like, listen, these are just numbers. It's not emotional. It's just numbers. So let's figure out what the numbers are. You don't have to beat yourself up. It's all good. Let's move forward, right? That's kind of the attitude that I take, and people seem to respond to it. So with that being said, this study was done in 2018. The average working musician makes $21,500 a year from their music. That's usually not enough to sustain somebody. So there's other income or there's a spouse involved, but that's the number. And let's see what it looks like broken out. So this chart has three different columns: how many musicians earned income from this activity, what share of their income it is. So this the middle column equals 100, and then the median earned amount. This pretty much perfectly lines up with the tax returns that I've seen, except that they are often more. A lot of the musicians I see are more than this. And, you know, that might just be a factor of my pricing, you know, but regardless, one thing that I have noticed is that if musicians make less than, I'd say, $5,000 or $6,000, or they don't know that they can take a loss and write off all their expenses, they don't file a tax return at all. If they didn't get any 1099s and they feel like they didn't make a profit, sometimes they just skip their Schedule C. So there are numbers missing from this that people might not be claiming or might not be registering. But what's happening in the world is that there's a lot more 1099s being issued. So a lot more of this money is coming to the surface. And that gives us more data. It gives us more things that we can do these economic analyses on. And I think it's all really exciting. So let's kind of work through this chart just really quickly. 80%, almost 81% of all musicians make money from live performances. That's gigging. This is kind of the beginning of what the four different industries in music are. Gigging is a service industry. In order to play a concert, you have to show up, unless you're on Roblox, but that's another conversation. So if you want to play a gig, you have to show up. You have to be in person. You're probably going to get a 1099. There are probably other people involved, and it makes up about 41%, 42% of musicians' total income. That's what was wiped out during the pandemic. This is what the very first thing that we're all trying to bring back. We're trying to get real humans back out into venues. It is very hard. Shows are not selling the way that we are hoping that they will, but you know, we'll get there. I have a lot of ideas and I really need everybody's help. So we're going to talk about that a lot over the next few weeks. So audio and video recordings. I want you to look at the share here. 36% of people earn money from audio and video recordings, but it's a very low amount. It's only about $850. These are sales. People are pouring a ton of money into the selling platforms and the sales and the CDs and the vinyl. And we haven't seen them getting a return on this investment in a long time. And I mean print, like producing literal items that they can sell. So that's like putting DVDs out, putting CDs out. We'll talk about vinyl later because vinyl's slightly different. But all this is to say the recording industry of the music business is the second one that we're going to talk about. So live performances are a service industry. The recorded music industry is an asset industry. Recorded music is an asset. And it usually, if it is able to be valued, it lives on the balance sheet as an asset. So that's a copyright hold for both the audio recording and the publishing, which we're going to talk about later in depth. We have a whole copyright lesson. But what I want you to know kind of top level right now is that on most musicians' tax returns, we already have two different kinds of companies. We have a service-based company and we have an asset-based company that might have partners, might not, and it can cause a lot of confusion. Songwriting and composing is also included in that asset creation industry because when you write a new song, if it's entirely new, you are creating a new piece of intellectual property. And the next step for you is to go register that on the copyright office, publish it, record it and release it, and then collect royalties on the asset that you just released. Oh, and you have to license it too. That's the important middle part. So you license it to Spotify, you license it to YouTube, and maybe if you're lucky, you license it to Hulu or Netflix or Google or some brand that's going to pay you a whole bunch of money to use your intellectual property. And when they do that, they're going to pay you a royalty. Now, if your tax return states that you work in a different industry besides the music business, then those royalties are taxed as royalties. But if your full-time career is to be a musician, then those royalties are part of your self-employment income. And that is an extremely important part of the tax return that we're going to come back to. Okay, salary from band, symphony, and ensemble. So on top of having a service-based industry and having a bunch of assets that we have to keep track of, a lot of musicians also get W-2s, especially because of unions. And the union plays a huge role in the music business, and it is different from state to state. Unfortunately, that's part of the reason why I need you all, is because I need you to learn about your own local music unions, what the rules are, what the withholding is, how much people are usually working in those industries in that state. I know what it is for Michigan, for Detroit, but across the whole country, it can be very different. There are a couple of national unions, and we can talk about those a little bit later, but a lot of musicians, especially classical and jazz, they are W-2'd. They are part of unions. So that's just another factor for you to keep track of. And then we start to get into merchandise sales. Merchandise sales skyrocketed during the pandemic, specifically because musicians were asking for them. And it showed us as managers that merch is really important. And all we have to do is ask. People want to wear it like a billboard. They want the branding. They want people to know that they're part of the tribe. You know, when I see somebody out wearing the shirt of a band that I like, I definitely will tap them on the shoulder and say, I like your shirt. And it's I actually had a boyfriend that way once in 2003, and it was great, you know? So merchandise is on the upswing, and merchandise is a merchandising industry. It's completely different from the service and the assets that we've already been talking about, because it's the first time that we're introducing cost of goods sold into a musician's books. Sales tax, cost of goods sold, wholesale merchandise is a huge growth opportunity for musicians to understand properly. A lot of musicians typically price their merch in the 30 to 40% profit margin, and that's just on cost of materials. They're not factoring in shipping, paying somebody to sell them at the actual shows. They're frequently not factoring in merchant processing fees into the sale price, and they're definitely not thinking about sales tax at all. There's a lot of room for improvement in merchandise sales. And it's a really important element to the business because it is so closely tracked in so many different ways. Like Shopify is making reports. Are they right? We don't know where people aren't. Nobody's looking. I mean, I'm looking. But yeah. So merchandise sales is the third industry on top of service, assets. Now we have more assets in the form of merch, keeping track of inventory, keeping track of sales tax. Those are the two biggest pain points and the two things that keep me up at night because I'm worried about audits. That's where I'm at with merch. Okay, so I just want to fly through the rest of this because we pretty much touched upon the service industry, the asset industry, and the merchandise industry. The fourth one is kind of covers all of these here, and that is fan funding and patronage. I call it teaching, consulting, and coaching. And what it basically is the fourth income stream for a musician that actually makes them profitable and gives them expertise and moves them up into the next level of musician. And that's when they start to talk to people directly. So starting a blog, having a YouTube channel, there's like a whole bunch of people who have very successfully made courses, songwriting courses, built consultancies, and they charge like $350 an hour to have a private lesson. Cameo, you know, people are recording 40 seconds into a phone and getting paid $50. Little things like that are just hugely profitable. But the thing that I want you to know is that they're hugely profitable. There's not a lot of expenses that go into this. And so people who do really, really well on stuff like this have to pay estimates. And that part has been a pain point for a lot of musicians because they don't quite realize how much self-employment tax hurts at the end. So they're going through their day-to-day and they're thinking, I'm making all this money and I have some expenses, but it won't be that bad. And then they get to the end and the extra 15.3% of self-employment tax gets tacked on at the end. And they're like, oh no, what have I done? Right. And then they have to pay penalties and interest and they're getting estimate forms for next year that they don't know or if they're right. And it's a whole thing. So all of these little things here that, you know, this fan funding, patronage, YouTube monetization, singing at church, giving music lessons, that all kind of falls under like the human, the person. It might be outside of the business. It might be on your social security number. And that part of it, some people turn that into a separate Schedule C or a separate company of education, or some people want that part of it to be a nonprofit so that they can have charitable contributions flowing through it or donate their time or facilitate grants. You know, there's a lot of other stuff that we could do in here. And that's kind of the fourth industry is this catch-all of the human element of it, of like, who's the person and what's their expertise. And then there's a couple other things that I don't necessarily consider to be like separate industries within the music business, because I think they're actually separate industries entirely, like running a recording studio or being a producer. If I was doing a musician's tax return and they owned a studio, I would have the studio be separate from their band or their songwriting or whatever else was going on, simply because it needs to be insured as its own entity in case of like fire or theft or loss or something. And so I would separate that out. But there's all these other companies too that don't necessarily fall under like an artist company that we're going to talk about in this class. We're going to talk about management companies and how managers collect commission, how they pay people. We're going to talk about like expenses that the manager is spending on behalf of the artist and how you can break those out and make sure that everybody's getting paid the right amount. We're going to talk about producers. And the reason that producers are a little bit different is because they often take a portion of the ownership of the intellectual property and a fee, an hourly fee. And sometimes it's a recoupable loan. And so it can get really confusing. Okay, cool. So what is the point, right? Who even cares about all this stuff? The IRS. The IRS are the ones who care. And also grant companies, because a lot of musicians being in the arts and entertainment industry, they can apply for grants, but they need to have their books in tip-top shape and they often don't. So my course and what I'm trying to do here, it really narrows in at the end on an accurate tax return, but it's a broad umbrella of running a profitable business. So really what I've seen in tax appointments is that people sit down across from me and they look at that bottom line and they're like, that's all I made, really? And it's like, well, let's talk about it. You know, let's dive into it. And then they're like, okay, so how can I make little adjustments so that that number goes up higher, but also I'm not paying as much in tax, you know? And that's the game that we're always playing, right? And so they see the tax return as kind of like the final product of a year's work. And we want it to look beautiful for them, right? Okay, so the IRS wants consistency. And what that means is that if you use the EIN last year, you should use it this year. And if you had 1099s last year, they're going to want to know if you have 1099s this year or why you don't, right? A lot of musicians get like big windfalls from sync licensing or they release a project or they get put on a big festival and they get large amounts of money all at once. Those usually look like red flags to the IRS, unfortunately. And so a 1099 is essential. If they paid anybody out of that windfall, that's essential. And if when things get wonky, that's what the IRS wants to know about, is like, why is this different from last year, right? If you filed a partnership return last year, you need to file one this year, or you're going to get a letter. Little things like that. And then doing everything on time. That's a constant pain point for everybody, I think. They're like, oh, is it October 14th already? I should probably do that, right? Okay. So throughout the course, we're going to talk about ways to make all of this easier. There's a lot of apps. There's a lot of different things that we can do that will help. So with all that being said, that's usually what I come into the conversation with a musician. That's the information that I'm armed with. How much money they're making? 21.5 usually. A lot of times I see people making anywhere between 85 and 250. And that money usually involves a team. So I want to take a second. I want to do one more thing before we go, which is to talk about how it used to be really quick. I'm going to do this in 4 minutes. And then I want to have 15 minutes for like Q&A and networking and chatting and stuff. So the way that it used to be was that labels controlled everything. If we go back hundreds of years to when the printing press was invented, that's when copyright laws were written. And the reason that we even needed copyright laws in the first place was because of player pianos. So what was happening was somebody was writing a song, printing it on sheet music, and selling it at bookstores. And then player pianos started and they would buy the sheet music, program the piano to play the song, and that was the only time that the creator ever got paid, was when they just bought that one sheet of music, right? So the government invented this thing called mechanical royalties. And the mechanical literally refers to the player piano's mechanism. So what those mechanical royalties said was that anytime something mechanical plays the song that you wrote, you're going to get a little bit of money. We're still collecting mechanical royalties today on Spotify, and it is a completely ridiculous and antiquated system, literally based in the 1800s. I think it's ridiculous. I would gut the whole entire thing if I could, but I cannot. So in the meantime, we're going to have to learn how to live with it, right? So when they invented this second copyright, the second royalty of mechanicals, what ended up happening was, anytime music got played anywhere, the question was, is this subject to mechanical royalties. They decided that radio is not, but non-interactive digital radio is. So Pandora is subject to mechanical royalties, but terrestrial radio is not. Just to back up a really quick second, when you printed the sheet music and you composed the song and you registered and owned the copyright, you got what's called a publishing credit. And you were able to then license that song to anyone who wanted to sing it or use it or perform it anywhere. You could issue them a blanket license, which means that they can play it anytime they want and they just pay one fee. Or you can issue them a per use license, which means that they have to keep track of how many times they play it and they give you a certain amount every time they do. What ended up happening was a few organizations rose up to handle this on behalf of the musicians. The three in the United States are ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC. CSAC is invite only. Anybody can join ASCAP or BMI. There's a whole bunch of different reasons why you would or you wouldn't. We're going to talk about all that later. But for right now, what you need to know is that when you write a song and when you perform a song, that's two separate copyrights. The best example that I can give you is Dolly Parton wrote I Will Always Love You, but Whitney Houston performed it. Every time it's played on Pandora, both people get money. Dolly Parton gets money every time the song is played anywhere, including terrestrial radio. Whitney Houston gets played every time the audio recording of her music is streamed or used in any kind of media or downloaded, purchased, but she is not paid when that song is played on the radio. So when a singer-songwriter writes a song, what happens next is that they have to register it. And everything that's registered needs an identification number, and it has to get linked back to either a company or a person. So one of the things that we're going to talk about as we go through the whole rest of the course is what are all those different companies that the artist is going to need? A lot of artists are just doing it all under their social security number, which is totally fine until they start to bring in partners and write songs with other people. And then it becomes a matter of who's registering this copyright. Is it the business or is it the person? And a lot of times they really need help with areas like this. This is something that attorneys handle a lot and charge a lot for. So if there are other ways that we can help, then that's something that I really want to do. So all of this is to say, it used to just be that the labels would do all of this for them, for everybody. The labels used to just control it all. They controlled the studio. They controlled the copyright. They controlled the publishing. They controlled the publishing companies. And they would just be like, thank you very much for your time. Here's 15% after you pay back the $500,000 loan that you gave us. So Claire asked what recoupable means. Recoupable means that you're taking a loan from a label or a publisher, and you have to pay back that loan before you make a penny off of your royalties. So if a label gives you 45 grand to record an album, they're going to keep the first 45 grand of royalties that they collect on your behalf, and you'll start to get paid after that. So that's it's called a recoupable advance, and it is a loan. And what I want, we'll get into that in a second, but the way that it used to be was it was just all advances. The whole industry was advances, and it was just a big loany mess. banks were giving labels loans to give to artists to go make music. And then if the album didn't sell and didn't recoup the advance, they would get dropped. And that meant their manager usually quit, their business manager quit. Maybe they lost access to all their books. Depending on the deal, maybe they never got another penny. Maybe they don't get their masters back. All of that has shifted, luckily, because it was not good for the artist. And in that big shift has been a whole bunch of paperwork not getting done. Songs not being filed. Songs are being distributed onto Spotify, but they're not being published. So they're getting out there and you're able to collect the mechanicals, but you're not collecting the actual composition. And there's a whole myriad of reasons that we'll get into. But there's like all these little problems, right? And it is creating a huge middle class of musicians who are making money and getting forms for it, but they don't know what to do with them because nobody's really ever been trained on all this stuff except for the people that worked for the labels back in like 1999. So that's where we're at. It's a huge challenge. I think it's fascinating and exciting, and I'm like totally on board with it. But for the actual musician, sometimes it can feel extremely daunting and frustrating to the point where a lot of times they just give up. And that's what brings us around full circle to my why, is that it breaks my heart to think that there are talented musicians sitting in cubicles out there not making music just because they don't know how to handle the money part of it. If that's the only thing that's stopping them, I want to pull them out of there, and we can find ways, we can find money, we can do this, you know? And so the fact that there's all these people here that want to help me is amazing. And thank you so much. That is the end of our actual instruction time for today. And then there's this other part that I want to introduce to my teaching repertoire, which is like guided meditation and goal setting. So if anybody has time and wants to stick around after this, I'm going to do like a 5-minute guided meditation. And if anybody wants to join me on that, that would be fantastic. Don't feel obligated, but it's an extra thing for you. Okay. So today's meditation is called Exploring Yourself as a Leader. Let's begin by taking a moment to allow your body to settle into a comfortable position. And then close your eyes or keep them slightly open. Allow the spine to lift and the shoulders to soften. Take a deep breath, let it out. Today we will explore leading with purpose. Regardless of your position, whether in an organization or a family or the music business, you are called on to lead. Best leaders have a sense of clarity and purpose. They engage with the world and in how they lead others. They connect with people on a very human level. Begin by taking a full breath in and a long breath out. Let your attention rest on your breath. I'm going to ask you a series of questions. But instead of thinking about the questions or coming up with responses, I want you to allow the questions to sink like a pebble being dropped into a still pond. And I want you to notice any ripples on the surface. Take a few deep breaths. As a leader, what is most important to you? What are you aiming to achieve as a leader? As I ask these questions, just notice the thoughts and feelings and images that come to mind as you breathe in and out. What are the values that guide you? What may be preventing you from living your values each day? Now continue breathing in and out. Bringing attention to your body, noticing if your mind is wandering. Notice if you're attaching to any particular thoughts or feelings that arise. And now imagine yourself leading with purpose. What does that feel like? And now, as we begin to reemerge from this reflection, notice how you feel in your body and your mind. Checking in with your whole body from the top of your head, scanning down through to the bottom of your feet. Filling up your lungs with a few last cleansing breaths. And whenever you're ready, you can just open your eyes. How do you feel?
Fantastic.
Good. I'm so glad. If you want to share anything that came up, I would be happy to listen. If you want to hop off and do a little bit of journaling, that is a great idea as well. Some journal prompts could be the contributions I want to make most in the world are. And what are some ideas that you have for sharing this with others around you? And if anybody has any like big intentions for the class or, you know, big ideas of what you want to do with this information, you want to share it now or later, I'm here for it. I'm here for you. I'm so excited.
One of the things you said I really liked was, you know, like what kind of leader do you want to be? Like what kind of leader do you want your team to see?
Yeah.
And for me, like the image that came to mind was like being in the boat with my people all the time. And this like comes up at, you know, within my business. I want my team to always see me as the person who is equally willing to like wipe up the counters and take out the trash and do all the things and make sure that they know that their concerns are my concerns and that it's never seen as, you know, like leadership being a separate thing. It has to be a servant participant in the weeds with everyone else thing. So the image that came to my mind there was just like being in the boat together.
I love that. That's great.
And I think like a lot of what you were saying at the beginning of class about, you know, eliminating the worry about finances for clients, I think some of that maybe ties in where, you know, if they see it as you're in the boat with them and you're on the team and you're sharing their concerns, that maybe it makes it better for them and it improves a lot of their wellness, just knowing that they have someone on their side.
Yeah. Yeah, it absolutely does. I can say with certainty, that is a huge purpose of why they hire a business manager or a manager in general. And yeah, I'm in the boat with you and I'm going to help you and you don't have to tackle all this by yourself. So yeah, I love that you brought that up. Thank you.
Yeah. I don't have a video. I'm Claire.
Hi, Claire.
Could I chime in?
Yeah, absolutely. Please.
I just want to say hello. I'm a full-time musician. I've worked a lot of different jobs in the music industry and I came from classical music and now I'm a songwriter, I'm a band leader for a rock and roll band. And one thing I was thinking about when Mark was talking about, you know, you need proper representation or you're going to get screwed. I found that in my career, those people haven't showed up, meaning like the people who might help me haven't showed up. So a lot of my experience has been trying to learn what all the different jobs are, which I think probably in the end is the best thing that could have happened because it makes me a really knowledgeable business owner. And during the pandemic, I went from primarily being a touring musician who was a hired gun on other people's tours to becoming my own band leader. And now I'm hiring a lot of people. So my business has transformed completely in the last couple of years. Yeah. And one of the points I wanted to say about your meditation is, well, I personally found that meditation has been a lifesaver for me, especially in the last 2 years. And one of the things that I've tried to create for myself and that I want as a leader is to be a really sturdy rock, is to be like a safe haven. I found that one of my biggest struggles in the pandemic, losing all of my work, losing my home, losing my ability to pay for all of the things involved, was that it just felt like I had nothing sturdy. I had no foundation. I had nothing to hold on to. And I started doing a lot of meditations that focus on creating a home within yourself that you can always come back to, and creating a safe place within yourself. And if that's what I can bring as a leader to my bandmates, we're all in the same boat together, but if I can at least be like, I got this, even if I don't know how to figure it out yet, like, I'll be the person to do it. I'll figure it out. And I can sort of, I know that I have a sturdy foundation and a comfortable place inside myself to go back to, then I want to share that with all the people I'm working with.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. Thank you so much for sharing. That was beautiful.
That was really great, Claire. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I have often thought of myself as a lighthouse because I don't necessarily have all of the solutions, but I'm going to guide you safely to where you need to go. And I think it's funny that Claire brought up being a rock, which is usually what a lighthouse is on, and Stacey brought up being the boat. And it really is like that. Like, we have the musician, which is the rock. The musician, the music is the rock, the songwriter. Without that, we don't have anything. Without a song, right?
Good, like, I'm doing it right.
Yeah, you really are. And then I'm the one who's helping you find the, you know, like, scan out and make sure that we can find all the resources. And then Anastasia's driving the boat. And I think it's just really cool. This lightened me up, you guys. I'm excited. I haven't done this in a really, really long time. And this feels really good. Like a year. I think it's been like a year since I hosted a class.
Oh, I could share a few things.
Yes, please.
One, I admit during the start of the meditation, first thing that came to mind for me was like, oh, I got to do this other stuff for my day job.
Oh, yeah.
And so part of this journey is for me, it's also like, it's this identity recognition of like, Paul, this is what you love the most. This is what you're passionate about. Like, don't apologize and don't feel like you have to temper it by other stuff. Mm-hmm. So part of this is like, hey, I'm paying for this course because I'm investing in what's important to me. Mm-hmm. I'm not the 18-year-old kid who went to college is like, I don't know what major and my parents are paying for my college and, you know, this kind of thing. So it's a process of like, as you mentioned about leadership, it's like learning to be a leader for myself. Like, okay, what choices can I make for me that will make me happy in a way like that's self-care, really? Yeah. The other thing that I like about currently what I'm trying to do more as a musician with social media is to like sort of reflect to other musicians some of the things that are that I'm working through that are difficult that they may have. And one of those is because we talked about so many songs, like new songs every day, right? I got an email the other day from Spotify or Apple or whatever, and be like, congratulations, we've reached 100 million like songs in our catalog, whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, one way you could be like, oh my God, how am I ever going to like stand out in all this, you know? But then I was thinking, I shared one day, I just thought about like, you know, the idea of a drop in the ocean, you know, if you're a drop in the ocean, how are you recognized or stand out? And what I came to mind was, first of all, the ocean is beautiful. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't exist without all those drops. Mm-hmm. And the drop that you want to contribute is valuable and part of that beauty. So that is my message to everybody, like, who you are is unique and unrepeatable. So do your thing, because that's what gives completeness to our creative environment, you know? So
yes, that's amazing.
So I say that also, it's like, you know, self-talk too, just be like, to know like what you're doing. You don't have to be somebody else because there's only one you, you know, so do that. That's my TED talk. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you for your TED talk. I'm glad I came. All right, everyone. It's 2:30. Does anyone else have anything else that they want to add before we adjourn until next week? Same place, same time, similar format. Let me know if you have any questions. Thank you all so much. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
When Songs Mean Business is a production of Steph Belcher Business Management, LLC. This episode was hosted, edited, and produced by me, Steph Belcher. Please make sure to join us in our Facebook group, When Songs Mean Business, and follow us on Instagram at When Songs Mean Business. As always, thank you to The Dropout for the break music. Thank you so much for listening, and have a wonderful day.